Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, Something from the Cellar. Another midweek visit to the White Wine Question Time Cellar, brimming with vintage conversations from more than 200 guests, all served up for you on a Tuesday in bite-sized portions. And this week, we're back with another selection of how some of our guests have started out on the road to success in their chosen professions. Kicking off this episode, we have the Brothers Hanson, pop legends of the 90s, who joined me on the show last year to share how they hustled their way to the top, starting with this: the time they turned up without any kind of appointment at a hotel where they knew an influential music executive was staying. They called up to his room, called him down to reception, and put on a show for him right there. Talk about seizing the moment.
One of the early kind of semi-local people that made a difference in our career was a guy named Jim Halsey, who's now in his 90s, still works, represents many, many artists. And
Oakridge Boys, amongst others.
Yeah, I mean, he represented like half the country artists in the last, 30 years.
Wow.
Incredible guy. He was doing a conference in our hometown where he was bringing people together to try and sort of, curate, bringing more people into management and labels and trying to find artists.
And trying to talk to people in Oklahoma about it. This is how the music business works.
We knew he was in town, and so he was staying at a hotel. And one morning, both of our folks, our mom is extremely tenacious, and we were very young at this time, said, "Hey, we know that he's going to be here. Jim Halsey's going to be there. We really should go try and make sure to meet him." And so we got up, uninvited, at 7 a.m. that morning, showed up at the hotel.
At 7:30.
7:30, ready to sing with our three.
In the lobby.
Our dad calls upstairs. Again, our folks were, never the stage parents. Like, they were very much, but they were willing to jump in and kind of, they got it, that we really wanted to do it.
They weren't, they were assertive.
So there we are in the lobby. And
he calls
up to the room, and Jim goes hello and says, "Hey, my name's Walker Hanson. I've got my sons are performers, and they're really interested in making music, and I'd love to get a chance to talk to you." And he said, "That's great. The conference, is happening, later today." And he said, "No, you don't understand. We're in the lobby right now." And so Jim comes down and kind of pulls
Good
himself
man.
Together.
Good man.
And let me just tell you this. before you sing, you're the only ones in the lobby.
You're the only ones in the lobby.
Right. So that's, and hence, you know, the tenacity, you know, and there's so many examples.
Be the only one in the lobby.
Be the first one in the lobby.
Absolutely. Wow.
You know, there's, I mean, whether it was telling the story.
That's great.
The label, who ultimately signed us, you know, was an unlikely concert, you know, on the flatbed of a truck, you know, out in a tiny little town called Coffeyville, Kansas. You know, that was the guy that signed us was at that show where you're like, oh man, this is the worst.
Like, show. Of all the shows to come to, we have no fans. They'd rather hear us sing country music. We don't do country music.
You know, so there's so many of those things that when people tell their stories, you know, you talk about Carnegie Hall, you talk about the symphony, you talk about the hits, you talk about the 30,000 people in a parking lot. But but really, the power is in being the first one, the only one in the lobby, being the last one to leave, you know, hopping on the plane to try and meet that one person you think might make a difference to, you know, those things where you really kind of didn't have a guarantee. You know, even starting the label, you know, when we started the label in 2003, 2004, we'd had a lot of success. We had a very high value as a, you know, an entity, but people really didn't know what to do with us. You know, a lot of people around us, they did pretty much expected us to sort of fold in a way, to kind of cower at the moment. And not because we didn't have a certain amount of success potential. It was just a sense of, well, there's too many question marks. You know, this is probably going to start to fizzle out. And so those are the moments that really define whether or not you have a career. And sort of, you know, seizing the moment. There's a long list of those. And they're not, most of them are not.
They're not glamorous.
They're not like, and then I met my wife.
Because you never have to stop seizing moments. But if you understand the power of them, and because you take a gamble and it pays off, if you are the first in the lobby, then you understand that those gamble moments can come in. They can, you know, you can cash them in big time.
Yeah. What they say is you can't win games you don't play, right? And so there's no guarantees. But if you're not in the lobby, no one's going to hear you sing.
And I love the fact that he came down and acknowledged that you were the first in the lobby. I mean, did he do anything with you guys? Did he sign you? Or was it just that one kind of soundbite that fueled you on?
He represented really kind of giving us a strong foundation to actually go after it.
He saved our butts, really.
What he did is he introduced us to a really credible music attorney that became kind of the old guard, literally, you know, incredible attorney. And as we began to pitch and, you know, really go after getting signed or find a manager, he saved us from that attorney, saved us from signing a deal that would have really ruined our lives. A big label that was notorious for signing people with horrible, horrible deals. Jim introduced us to kind of a pathway, honestly, to building a really strong team. Like that was where, that was really, and we're still friends with Jim. I mean, he's in his 90s and still works every day. And still manages the Oak Ridge Boys, a classic country band. And
kind of Clive Davis with the Stetson, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And more character. But, you know, which doesn't say a lot.
Isn't that remarkable, though? Because in so many ways, that moment, you know, he was a bit of a guardian angel there. You know, the wrong deal can freeze your career, can stop you releasing music. It can kill your soul, you know.
Yeah, and certain things almost did. I mean, you know, like going back to that as an example, just for people that just to understand something, like, so you have songwriting royalties that you get paid. If we would have signed the deal that we were originally offered
by
that label, and the attorney said, hey, don't do it. And this attorney again was, you know, was brought to us by Jim Halsey, we would have given away almost half of all of our songwriting royalties for the rest of our lives.
Wow. So they want, what's what they call impetuity, is that right?
In perpetuity,
perpetuity,
sorry. Which basically means eternity.
Yeah.
Until the return of Christ. They wanted to shrink it down.
This is something, you know, this is something that George Michael fought and Prince. And you need people like that. And it damaged their careers. It damaged their ability to make music and put it out to people. But it's, you know, you need people like that stand up on a principle.
And one of the things it points to, and we're getting fairly deep into this discussion, but it points to being at a different point in your career. And we're all different in the way we create things. But I know I can feel in myself you know, we've got still got hopefully many, many more years being a creator, but I do have a sense more than ever of wanting to be that for other people, you know, wanting to impart, wanting to save somebody's life by giving them the power to be a more of a to be that dangerous, you know, creative force that actually knows their stuff, that knows their business, you know, that knows how to make
this. And takes what you did and pales it and does something that, you know, yours, what you've done pales in comparison to what they've done.
To be able to inspire people and to be able to be kind of be a steward for other creators, especially artists that, you know, it's this strange thing that, you know, most, it's not that it's not any, it takes any less effort because it takes in many cases, I think, more effort than most career paths. But you do have a strange thing where you have this risk of if you break, oftentimes people that do break in music, you know, you don't go through 5 years of school to then go become, you know, to become an attorney or a doctor or to be, you could go from a garage to a stadium, you know, it can happen.
And so
when that
happens,
you know, to be prepared to know how to manage that is really, it's like you're at huge risk.
Next up is chef and TV presenter James Martin, who joined me all the way back in 2020 and explained how his passion for food and his workaholic tendencies were apparent even at the tender age of 11 when he started working professionally while studying as a schoolboy. I'm the mother of an 11-year-old, okay, and he's got a pretty good appetite for life and ambitions, and I love that, but you were catering weddings with your mother at the same age as my son.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
And my mother didn't want to do it. Well, it was the business side of it. I wanted to be a chef. I wanted to be a cook. I started off in pot washing and I thought, you know, why isn't anybody else doing this? I'm reasonably good at this sort of stuff. And I thought I'd been working and training in France.
But you hadn't even chosen your GCSEs.
I know. But I realised if you bought a chicken and you did this thing with chicken and you did it with aspic and grapes and chervil and you put it on a platter, chauffeur is called. It's this cold chicken dish.
French, I'm guessing.
I learnt in France. Yeah, you poach the chicken and you make a stock using the chicken. And you skin the chicken and then you make a white sauce and you put aspic in it and you coat it like this, cover it over what it's cold, and then decorate it with grapes and chives and so it looks like vine leaves. Cover it in aspic. It looks amazing on a platter. And then you put individual chicken breasts with it as well. And I realised that when you bought a chicken for £5, you could sell it for £40.
Wow.
And it was quite good.
That's
a little bit of pocket money.
That's a margin.
And but then you had to make it, you had to have, I don't know, you had to know how to do it, I suppose. And that was the trick. And I'm like a sponge. I kind of absorb information from anybody and everybody fascinates me.
Right. So if you could award a Michelin star to people that have had an incredible influence on your life, the people that have shaped and carved out the path that you've walked, who would they be? And
my mother.
Your mum.
Yeah.
Straight off.
Oh. She's the inspiration that makes me get up in the morning, that makes me work, It's because you only get one. I couldn't afford two, but you only get one. but you only get one. And my mum's been through so much, and she still works now. My mum's 72. She still works. She works in a clothes shop. She works 5 days a week in a clothes shop for £30 a day.
And I bet you tell her not to.
I tell her not to, but she works. And she always worked all of her life. So she was the one that I remember when I was working in London, when I used to finish and I used to sleep for, I think the record was 41 hours I fell asleep for when I came home on a 4-day break from London.
After working in some of the kitchens
London. Yeah, and on either side of a family going, you're mad, what are you doing? My mother said, stick at it, you'll get there. And my family thought I was barmy. My mum's dad, my granddad said, you should be a cricketer, get a proper job. My granny was so upset that seeing me like that, and I just looked like this Amazonian
zombie
animal. Like my eyes were black and...
Because talk me through the hours in London. You were on crap pay. You were living in...
I think the people who know you, and this is the weird thing about this game, is people see you now. They don't see that. Mm. And, you know, and I think... I don't know. It falls to the fact that you still love your food, but My mum's taught me so much.
She saw that in you. So whilst everyone else was going, be a cricketer, pull yourself together, look at the state of you, what you're doing, you're mad. She was that one voice that said, keep going.
Yeah, I remember my mum came down and she came down for a meal 3 months after I'd left to go down to London. It's only 3 months. And I was working downstairs at 190 Queensgate, and it was the Restaurateurs Association of Great Britain was 190 Queensgate. That's how famous the restaurant downstairs was.
Wow.
The brasserie upstairs, the brasserie upstairs was just full of everybody, from Shirley Bassey to Commitments. I mean, it was the banging place.
And it was Anthony Worrell Thompson's place, right?
Yeah, the late 80s. I mean, that bar, that was the place to go. That and Kensington Place with Roly Lee. There was several places that were buzzing. Marco Pierre White, Harvey's, which I ended up going to eventually. But those kind of places, Stephen Bull's, all the trendy places, Alistair Little, I could list them.
Yeah.
There wasn't many.
In Soho.
There wasn't many, for sure. But they were mega. And I remember walking from the kitchen downstairs into the brasserie upstairs, because I had a load of desserts. I was a pastry chef there. And my mum was in the queue, and I walked past and said hi. She didn't have a clue who I was.
Why?
How weird is that?
Because
I'd lost 4 stone. I looked like this Amazonian
creature.
Yeah, I looked knackered. I totally looked knackered. I remember collapsing in the middle of service. There was people collapsing. I remember one person collapsed and had a heart attack in the middle of the service.
What?
And the head chef at the time, not at that restaurant, but the head chef at the time turned around and said, we carry on service, just move him out to one side. And I remember dragging him to one side, putting his head up by the side of this fridge.
This is awful.
And I'm carrying on cooking going,
is he all right?
This is what it's all about. I got stabbed through the arm by a Brazilian kitchen porter because I threw a pan in the sink. The place was, and I ended up walking.
What?
This is what happened when you were, you know, when straight through the arm. And
Jesus.
And I remember putting a tea towel around it and
hold
carrying
on.
On the
did
rest
the guy
of the
that day. had a heart attack, was he all right?
I think so.
You don't even know.
I woke up at the end of it.
Okay.
I think it was a panic attack, one of the two. But that was the thing back then. You know, it was like tea towel around your wrist and you walk to the hospital. And I remember walking into, I think it was Hammersmith. This is a hospital in Hammersmith.
Yeah.
Yeah, I walked to Hammersmith from Kensington.
No.
So that's quite a long way, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, I don't know the area. I don't know London at all. And I just turned left out the restaurant. There's got to be a hospital around here. And that was it. And
did you finish service first, though?
No, I was back in the kitchen that night.
Jeez.
We used to clean down the bench and I used to sleep on the marble slab in the kitchen.
So your mum must have been appalled when she saw the state of you.
She was. She came down and saw the restaurant, but she was appalled. But she said, it's what you want. It's what you've always strived to do. You from the age of 7, 8 years old, have always wanted to be a chef. So now you're in it. But your grounding is such that when you were a farmer, I thought, to be honest, I didn't care about the hours, and I still don't.
Well, farmers work all day, every day, right?
If you want to know about hard work, then you work in a farm.
Yeah.
Or you know, coal mining and all that. That's hard work. Not cooking a few bits of Dover sole. That's, at least you're warm and you've got something to eat. Yeah, the hours are a bit stressful and people shout at you, but it's not.
But when you came to London, you were working some of the best kitchens in the world, but your mum was still sending you food vouchers because you had no money.
Yeah. M&S food vouchers.
I thought was quite fancy.
Yeah,
M&S food.
She did. She used to send me microwave food vouchers. Well, it was food vouchers, and I used to go get microwave food. But yeah, that's the.
Because you weren't making ends meet.
No, I couldn't afford to live in London. I left London with, I think I was $7,000 in debt. I couldn't afford, and that was a long time ago. But I didn't spend anything. I had a bike, and I remember getting 50 quid on the way down from my dad from the train station down from London. And I remember spending 15 quid of it on a bloody taxi to get from the train station to the restaurant, and thinking, oh my God, it's expensive here.
Yeah.
And then suddenly realise you've got 35 quid left. And I had a bit of money, and that was it, and a bit of pocket money that I'd saved up. But all that went within months. It was gone.
But you don't go into the career path that you followed wanting to be rich. You do it because it's a drive, it's a passion, it's a hunger.
You do it because you love it. First of all, you do any job because you love it.
Yeah.
Success is not financial. Success is what's in your head.
It's reward,
what
right?
What makes you happy.
Emotional reward.
Yeah, and later on in life, you can look at it and have goals, and that's what I still do now. I set myself goals every year, but I think success is, my most successful time, without a shadow of a doubt, was way before television.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Last but certainly not least, we have Jungle Star and Radio 1 Drive Time DJ Jordan North, who recalls the unglamorous path he travelled and the many sofas he had to surf in order to get his foot on the first rung of the broadcasting ladder. Can you retrace your steps and identify the jobs, the breaks, the people and the opportunities that have put you at the Radio 1 Drive Time show?
Yeah, first of all, it has got to be my media studies teacher, Miss Wilson. She was my English teacher at school. So she said to me in year nine, I'm doing a media studies GCSE. It's brand new. So this was like 2004-05. It's brand new course, and I think you'll be really good at it. So I did this media studies course and loved it. And then when I left school, I know it sounds something like Billy Elliot, but when I left school, lads like me didn't go into the radio or the media industry. We all got trades. And it was like, if you're not that academic, you go to college, but if not, you get a trade. So I was learning to be a bricklayer. And I, for the first 6 months of leaving school, when I did my GCSEs, I was working for a builder, and I got sacked because I was rubbish. So my mum was getting on at me because I was just lying about the house watching The OC, daytime TV. And my mum made me go to a college open day at Preston College. It was like a local open day. And I just went to shut my mum up, and I was really sullen and sulky. And the woman, the careers advisor, said to me, oh, what GCSEs did you enjoy doing? Because I didn't get bad GCSEs. I said, oh, I really enjoyed media studies. And she said, oh, there's a media studies course here. You should maybe go. And I was like, 2 weeks. It already started 2 weeks later. So I went on the Monday to try it just to shut my mum up. And I've not looked back. And I've not looked back. And I've been there ever since. And I did this GCSE media studies course at college when I was 16. And I just knew then that this is what I want to do. I want to work in this industry. And then from there, I went to university and did student radio.
Yeah, which is so important, right? That is so important.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a brilliant nursery slope in which to learn and fail and pick yourself up, yeah, and dust yourself off. And just to be able to learn without loads of people listening in is massive. And it was while you were at uni that you applied, you entered a competition, didn't you?
Yeah, I entered a competition in my third year called the Hits Radio Competition. And it was basically to get four shows on national Hits Radio, which were pre-recorded, but it was fine. And I won that, and then...
You say that really casually, Jordan, right? That would have been, you know, inundated with entries, and you go, and I won that. That in itself, yeah, right, you know, to be the one voice that stands out above all others is pretty massive.
And then my biggest break was Five Live moved to Salford, to the BBC, and I am a big... like flyer, whatever the word is. It's too early for me to.
Yes. Yes.
Head into gear.
A torchbearer, a flag flyer will do. Yes.
I really do support the BBC, Channel 4, all broadcasting, not just coming from London, because if it wasn't for the BBC moving to Salford, I don't know where I'd be. So they just moved to Salford and they were looking for phone answerers and actually like runners and people to help people get used to the area. And that was my first job. I got 4 days a week, 3 or 4 days a week answering the phones for all the radio shows on Five Live. And that was weird.
Which again, right, is if for where you are now, to have done that, to have manned the phones, to have had that direct line with the listener, how important is that in terms of how it informs the broadcaster you are today? Massive.
Yeah. Oh, I learned all sorts. And then I learned, and because I was so eager and wanted to just learn everything about the radio industry, I used to stay behind and then offer to help out on writing scripts, and I'd just be there. I'd be there some days, 12, 14 hours, just trying to soak up all this information about how to be a good broadcaster. And then I actually got promoted from a phone answerer to a researcher. And I was like 22, 23, and I worked. And this is how things come back round. I worked on Richard Bacon's afternoon show, writing scripts and doing research for his items and different features that he'd done on the programmes. And in the morning, I worked on Victoria Derbyshire's show.
Wow. Who you ended up in the jungle with?
And we ended up in the jungle with her. So my main job in the morning, I used to get in at 8:30. Vic was on at 10 o'clock. I'd make sure all the callers were ready and lined up. I'd brief up the phone answerers because I was now one step above them. So I'd be like, this is what we're looking for on the show today. I'd make sure Vic's taxis were all booked and everything like that. And all the travel was in. And then I'd always make sure she had a cup of tea for when she got into the studio. And then I'd make her one at the 11 o'clock break and the 12 o'clock break. And then just came round. To be honest, of all the shows I worked on, I learned from Vic's show the most, because that lady I have got a lot of time for. She is precise. She does her research. She really does a prep for guests. And I've just remember learning a lot there.
You've spoken in the past about when you started out, you'd have to come back and forth to London, hugely expensive, trains aren't cheap, accommodation's not cheap. So you would just crash wherever some kind soul would put you up. And now you offer up your own sofa to young people coming to London as a kind of way of paying it forward. So I wondered, can you tell me about some of the sofas you've slept on and some of the people that you've had crashing out on your own?
So I always say I've got, there's two people mainly, Chris North, my first agent. He used to let me crash on his sofa when I come down. He'd like put me up in his flat whenever I had, because like Radio 1 had asked you to cover on a Sunday morning, but there's no trains on a Sunday morning, so you have to go up on the Saturday night. So, but then you can't really afford a hotel because hotels in London are really expensive.
Even the cheap ones are really expensive.
Even the cheap ones. And by the time you paid for your train and a hotel room, you'd probably be losing out on money.
Yeah, you'd be down.
You'd probably be costing you more money. So
yeah, so just Chris, so people know, when you go on Radio 1, for example, unless you're doing some of the big chunky shows that you're doing now, the sexy slots, then actually the money is nowhere near what people would think.
No, and I earn more money in commercial radio.
Yeah.
At the start, definitely.
Yeah.
So you sleep on Chris's sofa. George Godfrey, who's still a good friend of mine, he's also from Burnley, he's a radio presenter, and we were just destined to be friends. And we get on really well. He works for Radio X now. He's a really good broadcaster. So he used to let me stay in this tiny little office. It weren't even a box room, it was a tiny office, and he used to sleep on like a fold-out, blow-up bed on there. And then the other sofa I used to stay on, I don't know if I should say this, but say you'd get a call being like, oh, we need you to cover the early breakfast show at 4 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes you get the call last minute. So I'd get the last train up at 10 o'clock at night. I'd get to Radio 1 for 12. So that means they had 4 hours to kill. And then I just used to go and sleep on the sofa in the Radio 1 live lounge. or the playlist room. I'd take a sleeping bag and get 3-4 hours sleep. I thought, I'm not paying for an hotel for a few hours. So it was, and And there's loads. And I remember security waking me up one night and shining a torch in my eyes. I was like, no. He said, don't. I was like, please don't tell my boss. I'm not meant to be here. But I'm on air at 4 a.m. So I used to go in little rooms and sleep in little rooms at Radio 1.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
It's mad.
It is mad. But you're right, because by the time you've got the train down and then you've rolled a hotel, even like, you know, a cheapest chips hotel into the equation, you're doing the job for nothing.
And, pretty much.
And also, if you're staying with somebody and you've got to be leaving the house at like 3 a.m. to get to the radio station in time, or 2:30, that's really inconvenient for the people that are kindly putting you up, right?
Yeah, and it's not just that. Like, I don't know about you, but I really like my own space. Apparently, I did one of those online quizzes things. I'm an introvert, extrovert, so I love people, but I get my... Oh, God, can't you tell I've been living in London for a few years now? I get my energy from time on my own. So I used to always find it hard that you'd have to be on it and sit in people's living rooms. And, like, oftentimes I just want to be, like, have my own space. But so that was quite hard.
I think that's quite common in with broadcasters, you know. You know, we chat for a living, so I'm quite happy to sit like some sort of monk in the evening and say nothing.
Yeah. And I know people now, like my producer Louis, who's a good friend of mine, like he has stuff planned every night. He's got football, or he'll go and be doing this, and he's going for like a wine tasting night, and I'm like, I just go and get my trackies on and watch telly. Love having a free week. I get home, people are like, oh, you're on Radio 1, you must be at parties all the time. I'm like, I'm in my trackies for 7:30, watching Corrie. it's a perfect night for me.
Thanks so much for joining me for Something from the Cellar and exploring some of the brilliant stories about how some of our many guests have started out on the road to fame and fortune. I hope you're enjoying these midweek drops as much as I am, and I'll be back on Friday with a brand new guest. In the meantime, if you want to revisit these episodes in full, simply search for them via the guest name. So we've had Hanson today, the chef James Martin, and broadcaster Jordan North. Enjoy.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.